Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the SNC-Lavalin Q2 2012 conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be provided at that time. If anyone has any difficulties during the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Friday, August 3, 2012, at 3:00 P.M. Eastern Time. I'll now turn the conference over to Mr. Denis Jasmin, VP of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to SNC-Lavalin's 2012 second quarter conference call. With us today are Ian Bourne, Vice Chairman and Interim Chief Executive Officer, and Gilles Lemieux, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Our earnings announcement was released this morning, and we have posted a slide presentation on our website, which we will refer to during our call. Before we begin, I would like to ask everyone to limit yourself to two or three questions to ensure that all analysts have the opportunity to ask questions. You are welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. I would also like to remind listeners that, as detailed on slide three, certain statements or comments made during today's call and slide presentation may be forward-looking. Such statements or comments represent management's best judgment and expectations as of today's date, are subject to certain risks, uncertainties, and assumptions, which are described on slide number three and cannot be guaranteed. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ian Bourne.
Thank you, Denis. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us. Before I turn the conference over to Gilles, who will explain the results in detail, let me share with you some information about where the company stands today. As you've seen from this morning's release of our second quarter 2012 results, our net income was lower than the same period last year at 33 million dollars compared to 102 million dollars in 2011. Net income excluding ICI was 2 million compared to 60 million for last year's second quarter, mainly reflecting operating losses in the power and infrastructure and environment segments, as well as a lower contribution from the hydrocarbons and chemicals segment. The results in Q2 were affected primarily by the adjustments required in the two projects that we'll talk about later, one in Russia and one in Tunisia. Our net income from ICI decreased to 31 million dollars compared to 42 million for the second quarter of 2011. However, excluding last year's second quarter Highway 407 special dividend of 18 million dollars, the net income from ICI actually increased by 7 million or 31%. We have decided to revise our previously announced 2012 outlook, for which the expected 2012 net income was to be in line with full year 2011 net income. This revision is mainly as a result of unfavorable cost reforecasts related to project execution in the second quarter of the year. In our ongoing project review process, we have recorded additional costs on two major fixed-price projects during this quarter, approximately 50 million dollars for the power project located in Tunisia and about 16 million dollars for the hydrocarbons and chemicals project located in Russia. We are now expecting that the 2012 net income will be in the range of 325 million-340 million dollars. We're currently observing that the overall economic slowdown worldwide is creating a gradual reduction in bidding activity in certain segments of our company and a resulting potential decline in backlog movement. Therefore, we anticipate that the backlog in the next two quarters is unlikely to reach the same near record heights that it has attained in the recent past. On the other hand, the company's financial position remains solid, with cash totaling 1.2 billion as of June 30, 2012. Our order backlog is currently strong and continued to grow during the quarter, bringing the backlog to 10.7 billion at the end of June, which represented a good position from which to approach the next two quarters, which, as I said, could be affected by global market conditions. Notable additions to our backlog this quarter were the Highway 407 East Extension, the Saint-Justine University Hospital Center in Montreal, and the Mina de Cobre copper mine in Panama. During the last analyst call following our May 3 annual meeting, I mentioned that my role was to stabilize the company until a new CEO has been found. Part of his stabilization has been to oversee the implementation of the remedial measures that were recommended by the board's audit committee, all of which have been enacted or are now being applied. Namely, we have reinforced the code of ethics, developed a new training plan to support it, revised the reporting structure and the delegation of authority, overhauled the agent's policy and the process through which agents may be hired, and other actions, all intended to reinforce the compliance environment and the already good governance standards of the organization. With respect to the CEO search, we have previously said that the process would likely take between 3 and 6 months from the date of start, which was March 26th. I continue to be confident that this schedule can be achieved. I also know that the issues regarding recent investigations concerning SNC-Lavalin and certain former employees remain of interest externally as they are to us. Since our last discussion, I can report that there have been no results or conclusions that have been announced, so we are able to contribute very little that is new to the discussion. It has been widely reported that 2 ex-employees have been arrested on suspicions related to the World Bank inquiry. The bank's temporary suspension on one of our subsidiaries does remain in place, and we continue to maintain that justice must be served and that if there are those who are found guilty of wrongdoing, they should be dealt with accordingly. Otherwise, because these continue to be ongoing investigations, we must make every effort that they and the rights of those involved are not compromised. We are limited in what we can say. It's not currently possible to predict the outcomes of these investigations or whether any penalties or other sanctions may be imposed against the company in this regard, including whether charges or sanctions could be brought against us in connection with possible violations of laws or contracts. It is possible that other investigations of the company by these or other authorities may be initiated, or the scope of the existing investigations may broaden. I would like to reiterate that SNC-Lavalin is as committed as ever to demonstrating good governance and ethical behavior as being the only way we will conduct our business. We continue to devote considerable effort to moving ahead on the right footing and to serving our clients professionally and with the same care and attention which they have come to expect. To conclude, despite the lower net income and our revised outlook, we're encouraged by our strong financial position and the backlog at the end of June. We have made significant progress in moving forward to the next chapter of our company's evolution and appreciate the support from our investors and clients, which seems to confirm that we're on the right path. Obviously, the arrival of a new CEO will be the next significant step that the company will take. And in the meantime, we continue to execute projects to the best of our ability and to actively pursue new business opportunities in our target markets and regions around the world. We remain a leader in the world of engineering and construction with now approximately 32,000 talented people in about 100 countries. And we have the capacity and capability to weather the current challenges we are facing, whatever their nature, as we have for the last 100 years. I'll now turn the conference over to Jill to review our financial results. Jill?
Thank you, Ian. Good afternoon. If we turn to page 5, of selected income statement elements, we can see, as mentioned by Ian, that our net income in the second quarter was $32.5 million. When we look at the variances, you look at the net income from Highway 407 was lower in 2012 as $18.5 million of dividend was paid in, as special dividend in the second quarter of 2011. Net income from other ICI stand at a higher level at 15.8, mainly because of higher contribution from AltaLink and lower contribution from a power plant that a concession in the power business we have called SKH. The net income excluding ICI was lower and impacted by $50 million because of the loss on the 2 mentioned projects. Turning to slide number 6, our revenue in the second quarter as well as on a 6-month basis were higher, and the increase is mainly due to higher level of services activity. Our gross margin in the second quarter again, was impacted by the two loss on the unfavorable cost forecast on the project, and likewise on a year-to-date basis. Selling and general and administrative expense were higher at $212.7 million in the second quarter, higher mainly because of two reasons. First one being the acquisition we've made during the course of 2011 that did not impact as much 2011 than 2012. And secondly, because of a growth in terms of product development and in search of getting additional work. On a year-to-date basis, we have been impacted also by $12 million from special expenses that dealt with the investigation that we had discussed previously. And in the quarter, these charges were about $2 million. I would like now to turn to page number 7, reflecting our results by our operating segment. Our infrastructure and environment, we had a loss in a quarter of $6.7 million, mainly because of higher selling and general and administrative expense, offset by higher gross margin. Again, we are impacted by that. One of the reasons is certainly the impact of that margin does not compensate the level of overhead we do have in this segment. Mining metallurgy, we also had more SG&A, but offset by higher gross margin. And on a year-to-date basis, as the gross margin is much higher because of higher revenue, but slightly offset by higher SG&A. Power segment, we're having on a year-to-date basis a $21 million of operating income compared to last year of $53 million. But, as I mentioned previously, it got affected by about $50 million from the loss on the Tunisia power project. The hydrocarbons and chemicals, our operating income after 6 months is lower at $22 million compared to $42 million, and that again was impacted by the unfavorable effect of $16.6 million on the Russian services contract that we had a loss on. In terms of other industry, we have a lower operating income mainly because of lower gross margin to revenue ratio. And I would say the same for operation and maintenance, where we do have $12 million compared to $21 million in 2011, again because of lower gross margin to revenue ratio. The ICI, same explanation on the gross margin side, being the lower dividend of Highway 47 and the lower contribution from SKH, but offset partly by the higher performance of AltaLink. Turning to slide 8, our financial position, our cash and cash equivalents remain strong at $1.2 billion. Apart from that, in terms of balance sheet, we can see that our property and equipment from ICI is increasing to almost $3 billion now, and mainly because of the increase in capital expenditure that takes place at AltaLink. Turning to slide number 9, our cash flows. Our cash generating from operating activities slightly higher in 6 months of 2012 compared to 2011. And two reasons for that, mainly because of net change in non-cash working capital, but was more favorable in the first 6 months of 2012. That's the main reason for it. Investing activities, one of the big impact of the variance between 2011 and 2012 is the increased capital expenditure for AltaLink. And financing activities, again, the increase relates to the increase of non-recourse debt within AltaLink, which brought our cash position at the end of the period, as I mentioned, to $1.2 billion. A revenue backlog on page 10 or at 10.7 billion, we can see that our services compared to March and to December remain about the same level. Our packages increased to 6 billion, and as mentioned by Ian previously, related to the Highway 407 East Extension Project, and as well the St. Justin Health Project that we signed also in the second quarter. Operation maintenance remain about the same level than it was in March and December. Turning to slide number 11, if we look into the breakdown by the operating segment, we can see that infrastructure and environment is higher compared to December in packages activities, and mainly again because of the two previously mentioned package projects being Highway 407 extension and St. Justin Hospital project. And mining metallurgy slightly higher, and again, as mentioned, was the Mina de Cobre Panama copper project that helped compared to the December 31st, 2011. And on the power side, we can see an increase, and certainly we had the Darlington RE2 project with Ontario Power Generation making it to be higher in the package segment. The rest, the hydrocarbons and chemical, we can see a reduction into a package business as we have consumed or earned revenue more than what we've been booking. And likewise, in the other industry, booking has not kept pace with the revenue recognition. That ends my part of the presentation. We are now open for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now conduct a question and answer session. If you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset for using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. One moment, please, for your first question. Your first question comes from Anthony Zika from Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
Ian, could you give us some color on terms of the two projects, the one power project in Tunisia and the other hydrocarbon project in Russia? Like, when are these troubled projects supposed to be completed, and is it possible that we could expect, you know, a spillover of revised costs going into the future quarters?
I'll make a slightly more general comment, and then Jill can talk a little bit more in detail. I think both of the projects are progressing, but the Russian project in particular is slightly over 50% done, pushing 60%, and the percentage in the Tunisian project is around 32%. So, you know, we've got a fair bit more work to do on that one. The expected completion date for the power plant is December 2013, and so of course, you know, we've made the bookkeeping entry, as you do when you recognize a cost reforecast and lower margins, which then means that the margin being booked along the way is going to be slightly lower. So to the extent these things extend into 2013 and 2014, you know, it will have some impact. But in terms of are we worried about the projects, you know, heading further south, you know, we think we've got a pretty good handle on the outlook at this point.
Okay. Jill, do you have anything to add on that?
No, just maybe on the project in Russia, the expected date of completion is March 2014.
Okay. And Jill, how should we look at the SG&A cost going in the future?
Certainly, you saw what we've shown. I think for the time being, there's no real, cut-cutting measure that we are dramatically in order to reduce the overhead, but certainly is something that we need to take into account. When we look, for example, the infrastructure and environment segment, whereby the volume is quite acceptable, maybe the margin is not at the level it should be, but certainly it gets the segment to be having quite a big break-even or loss because of the level of SG&A. So it's something to be that we need to take a close attention to.
Okay, and one last question. When we look at your ICI business, it seems that some of your other ICI business has occurred a loss. What's behind it?
Other ICI, no, there's no loss into it. And again, there's a confusion that in maybe first quarter when you're referring to AltaLink published results, but when you look at the AltaLink published results, there are some, as you would look into a note to financial statement, other debt above the AltaLink published results that are related to the AltaLink entities or holding entity. And therefore, you need to take that into account. And when you consider that, you'll see the other are making a profit as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Yuri Ling from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Ian, Jill, Denny, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Jill, I just want to talk about the guidance for the rest of the year. You were, I found it interesting that you gave actual number range. That's unusual for SNC. So even at the low end of guidance, it implies some significant improvements in the back half of this year. Is that driven by a rebound in ENC? Can you provide a bit of color on your confidence level in this forecast, and you know, what gets us to possibly the high end of that range?
It's still, I would say, everything lies on the execution of the work, because on not much relates to, let's say, signing many contracts. It's really much more related on the execution. And there's not that many, let's say, potential upside we included in the forecast. On the other hand, there is potential upside, but I would not necessarily at this stage count on that. So it's challenging on the basis that you've seen your results after 6 months, and therefore now the execution needs to take place. So that be the challenge in the months to come. So if the execution is there, for sure, I think our forecast as it stands looks that it's achievable.
But just so I'm clear, it's going to be, I mean, you're not expecting any kind of windfall in ICI that's going to get you there. It's a rebound in core ENC earnings, correct?
It's correct. For sure, there could be some, if there would be some more, let's say, dividend from Highway 407 than what we have seen over the last few quarters, then that could be an upside. But the amount of forecast of 225 to 240 is not predicated on, let's say, an upside coming from the ICI.
Okay, and my second question, given that the cost reforecasts on these two projects are in pretty far off places, I'm curious that if the changes that were implemented in the second quarter on the internal controls over financial reporting, there was a number of changes that were made in the second quarter. Did this have any impact on these cost reforecasts?
No, that has nothing to do with it. Again, it's a question of, you know, execution and operation. There is challenges to be working in those two countries, and certainly this transition of new leaders as well in those group, if I could say, and new project manager and new teams. So that brings, you know, some revisiting of the way we're executing and the way to achieve those projects. That makes it certainly a potential for a revised forecast. On the other hand, it's also part of our doing and of, you know, the risk of doing fixed price contract to have some adjustment to the total forecasted on given project. Are we happy of that? No. But certainly we're giving all the disclosure that deals with providing color to what happened in the quarter.
Thanks. I'll get back in the queue, guys.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Hamza Mazari from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hey, it's actually Andrew here on behalf of Hamza. Just had a question, if you guys could comment on how you're thinking about acquisitions and your ability to do, you know, a larger deal, particularly, you know, in light of some of the deals that we've seen in the space recently.
Why don't I take that one? I mean, we continue to look at acquisitions in the context of the overall strategy, and the, you know, as I think I said in the last call, you know, we are not taking our foot off the pedal in terms of growing the business and doing the kinds of things that we think are in the best long-term interest. And so to the extent that acquisitions, be they, you know, the smaller tuck-in variety or the larger ones, if they come down the pike, meet our criteria and look like they're a good deal, we're ready to do them. We've actually looked at two or three things in a fair bit of depth this quarter and concluded that they really didn't make good strategic and financial sense, so we've decided not to pursue them. But it's a result of doing the analysis, nothing else.
Okay, thank you. And maybe you could just talk about what you're seeing in the mining business and whether you're seeing any incremental slowdown or pullback.
Well, we're seeing kind of a worrying trend, you know, in that whole sector. I mean, you look at the pricing of some of the commodities. You look at, you know, the BHP Billiton folks, you know, have announced a slowdown in the hub project, the potash activities out in Saskatchewan. Obviously, a couple of sort of unfortunate casualties in the gold sector over the last little while here in Canada. My read is that it's a period of people kind of being careful with their commitments. On the other hand, we're pretty encouraged with our involvement in the project in Panama, which looks like it's on very solid footing, and we're working well with our client there, and we're ramping up the levels of activity and driving full steam ahead on that one. So I'm a little more concerned about kind of what's coming down the line in the way of new bid activity than I am in terms of dealing with the projects that are on the books today.
And there's certain positive that deals with the Plan R on the mining business, if I could say. And so there is, not to say that it's, you know, to be compensating for maybe some reduction, but certainly there is that positive of Plan R that we're looking at.
Okay, thank you. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Sarah O'Brien from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys.
Hello,
Sarah. Can you talk a little bit about that Tunisian project? Just in the list we have, I know there was a power project that I didn't think was that material to kind of merit a $50 million reforecast. Is this anything related to the joint venture partner, if that is the project? Or is it more, as you said, just transitioning a team? And I guess that leads to another question. Was it not just the leader who changed, but the staff working on this project? Have you had departures recently because of change of leadership?
There have been some changes at the project manager level, and also we've increased the number of expatriate people, and there have been changes in the way of let's say, executing the project as well. So quite a bit of a new type of approach to make sure to, you know, to deliver a quality project to the client. So it's a project that new leader overall at EVP took over, and he's putting his hands into it to deliver a quality project to the client.
Okay, but it's nothing to do with problems with a joint venture partner or anything like that?
No, it has nothing to do with that.
Okay. And just on the SG&A, again, kind of curious how it drives a loss in the infrastructure group. Is there anything related to claims from clients on former projects or any unusuals in there other than the $2 million for the investigations?
No. And I would say first on the investigation side, when we look with, let's say, allocated over the different segments, so let's say when we take the amount of $12 million about that's allocated over on a year-to-date basis. But no, it's just a matter of they've been looking after big jobs, and they have had, you know, over the years looking at very big projects and having quite a bit of an infrastructure and of SG&A. So it's something that, and like I said in previous quarters, the margin on those infrastructure and construction packages contract are not that huge, which therefore makes it, if you have a structure that is with quite a bit of overhead, makes it challenging.
Okay, so why wouldn't you be cutting that now if, like, I know you've got your hands busy with other stuff right now, but just wondering, when is a plan to revisit the level of SG&A?
Well, I think the other thing to remember in the SG&A, Sarah, is the acquisitions of things like Candu and Interfleet, by definition, add some SG&A to the run rate. And so, you wouldn't cut them, if in fact they're starting to generate some margins and so forth. The one thing that we are being pretty careful about is, to the extent we're getting a little bit, hesitant about the level of bidding activity, we're really being pretty judicious about the bids that we're going to go after, because these things obviously, as you know, cost money to produce and submit. And so our process of go, no go is perhaps being a little more rigorous these days, and that, in particular is a way to put a bit of a choke point on the overhead costs.
And to the point that Ian is making, when you look on a year-to-date basis after 6 months, and we were at $319 million of SG&A, we're now at $396 million, but there is $50 million that deals with business acquisition variances impacting 2012 versus 2011, $12 million of the investigation, so the remaining of $15 million, so we have $15 million over $319 million. So overall, it's increasing, but not to the level of panicking. The only thing is with certain segments, it's there, the balancing about the profitability versus the level of SG&A.
Okay, sorry, just to repeat, it's 55.0 million related to acquisitions?
50, that's it.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Michael Tupholme from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Michael.
On the Q1 conference call, you provided us with some information concerning the gross margins earned by category of activity, and I'm just wondering if it's possible to get that again for the second quarter for packaging services, et cetera.
So on the service side, we got on a year-to-date, not year-to-date, for a quarter, 22% on the service side of gross margin to revenue. And again, like I was mentioning, got impacted by the loss of the Russian project, and that's the reason why it's at 22%. And on package side, it's at about 4%, and again, being impacted by the $50 million of loss on the power project.
Okay, perfect. Maybe you've covered this off, and it's somewhat related to one of the earlier questions. But just to be clear, there was a comment in the press release in terms of the identification of the need to take these or have these unfavorable cost reforecasts. The comment is that they sort of emanated from ongoing project reviews, and I'm just curious: do you mean that to be sort of the ongoing type of reviews you would always see and always have seen, or is there some? Has there been some sort of heightened review process that you've been undertaking more recently and that continues to go on right now?
No, it's the regular quarterly reforecast of all the projects. You know, just by way of background, the process that we go through is that, you know, the financial and the operating people within each of the businesses, you know, reforecast these projects on a continuing basis. And then I have a review with each of the members of the OOP on a monthly basis on things like earnings and projects that they're working on, and then we do an official forecast once a quarter.
Okay.
And that process has been in place, you know, long before I've been involved.
Right, so no changes to the process?
Correct.
Okay. And with these two projects where you experienced the unfavorable cost reforecast, are you now in a position where you have simply reduced the margins you're earning, or are you earning a zero margin on these now?
Well, we are in a loss position on those two projects.
Okay, so zero margin from now until completion, unless you revise the estimates upward, I suppose.
Right, correct.
Okay. And can we get a bit more, it sounds like you've given us some detail then on the what gave rise to the situation in Tunisia, but unless I missed it, I'm not sure exactly what is it that's behind the reforecasts in the Russian project.
I think one of the considerations in the Russian project is, you know, where some of the work is being done, and I think there's more work being done in London than was originally expected, for example, compared to that which was going to be done in Russia. So, you know, there are a few items that I don't think I want to go into any meaningful amount of detail on it, but you know, that was one item that was worth referencing.
So just so I'm clear, you've changed where the work is being done from what you had originally planned, is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's related to the quality, and as you would expect, it's a little more expensive to do it in London than it is in Russia, but we feel the quality is the overriding consideration here.
Right, okay. Okay, thanks. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Paul Letcham from CIBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Just looking at the recent past, there's been unfavorable, significant unfavorable cost reforecast in the last few quarters now. So I'm just trying to get a sense of, was there a period of time in sort of the 2010, 2011 in the downturn that S&C was more aggressive, excuse me, in bidding on projects than maybe you should have been at the time because of the downturn that is now causing these overruns? Was there, you know, is there something more widespread we should be thinking about the process that was used to bid for these and manage these projects?
I would maybe put some color into that. You know, as I pointed out, many instances in the infrastructure and environment projects in Canada, as it's quite competitive, that has certainly brought, you know, pressure point to our traditional margin. So I think I said that before. For sure, in the hydrocarbons and chemicals, as was pointed out before, they had been quite a bit focusing in increasing the level of backlog. And when you do that, there is a risk that you may enter into projects that, you know, let's say risk versus profit margin maybe brings a bit more challenge, and in that sense, you know, it may have happened. And with regards to the project in Tunisia, certainly power business, that is one that, you know, I would say that was taken, and I don't think there was necessarily an anticipation that it was more or less competitive at the time it was signed. Again, you know, we are highlighting those, and, you know, there were some others as well, and there were also others in other periods where it provided some upside. But it's also a bit part of the nature of the fixed-price business.
Understood. Have you implemented changes now, though, to sort of get you back on site? Especially given that the backlog has been going up over the last year, how can we get any confidence that the projects you've been signing, the projects in the backlog, will actually end up producing margin for you or expected margin? What how should we think about the work in backlog outside of these troubled projects at this point in time?
I would say, you know, what we've been signing, let's say in the nuclear, we have talked about the Darlington retube, and it's certainly something that, you know, when you look at the track record of our group to deal with the nuclear business, they've been producing good results. We have also signed in infrastructure and environment. However, that being said, like I said, the Highway 407 and St. Justin Hospital Health Center, it's competitive, as I mentioned. So, but again, historically, the company has been able, if you look, for example, on one project that, you know, we did well, which was Canada Line, and I think quality was there. It's one project that was competitively bid against other competitors that were foreign, and we delivered there. So I don't want to enter into necessarily the margin on each and every project, but the company had a track record of delivering. Certainly we're disappointed to see those two projects, in particular with the magnitude of the power project, but you may understand the circumstances of, you know, changes that were at the executive level, but moreover at also project manager level and even below with more people. But again, with in mind, quality is something that we want to keep.
Well, and I think there's another angle to bear in mind in this, and that is that, as we all know, when we get a negative cost forecast, we do the bookkeeping accordingly. But if we negotiate a claim that's recovery, you know, we don't book that till we've either got the cash in the bank or got the agreement signed, sealed, and delivered. And so, you know, while yes, there have been a couple of negatives this quarter, you know, we're working on some claims that I'm hopeful will come together in the second half of the year. So if you look at it over a bit of a cycle, it's perhaps not quite as sort of graphic as this quarter might lead you to think if you're just looking at the quarter alone.
And to that point, Ian, on a year-to-date basis, not that it's spectacular, but the gross margin to revenue on packages is at 7%. I quoted 4% for the quarter, but despite the second quarter at 4%, we're still at 7% on a year-to-date basis, and that's the level we always said that we were shooting between 7 and 10% on the package gross margin to revenue.
Understood. Just if I may sneak one quick one in. You mentioned, I think the Russian project you said was a hydrocarbon and chemical project. What was the weakness in infrastructure and environment then in the quarter, the loss? What project was that related to, or where was it?
No, we did not mention there were any lost projects that had any significant in infrastructure and environment. It was mainly because the mismatch of the level of overhead compared to the margin generated overall.
I'm not sure I understand. I mean, it's a pretty sizable loss for a division that used to be quite profitable. So can you explain in more detail exactly what that is?
In the first quarter, we had the same situation. When you look at the level of profitability of the first quarter in infrastructure and environment, and we are again, but this time around it's a loss, but not that much significant a difference.
Yeah, this is a division that a couple of years ago was making, you know, tens of millions of dollars of operating income per quarter, and now it's a loss. So what exactly is that loss risk? How do you get there? And what do you need?
A lot of the project, again, like I said, has to do with Canada P3 project, and which the margin, there is some challenges on the margin being, you know, more towards the lower end compared to the level of overhead of these groups of infrastructure and environment.
Okay. All right, I'll get back to you. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Bert Powell from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Ian, in your MD&A, you talk about continuing to look into matters beyond contracts and payments considered in the independent review. Can you comment where you are in that process and if that is a gating process that you have to get through in terms of offering some comfort to you know, any prospective CEOs?
I would characterize it this way, Bert, that we used, I think, much the same wording in the first quarter and in our year-end release on the expectation that as we work our way through a number of these items that were raised and as we work our way through the implementation of, you know, the controls and changes and some of the other kinds of things, to the extent we find something, you know, in that process that precipitates a little bit of further investigative work, we're going to do it, and we are doing that. So it's sort of ongoing. In terms of dealing with a prospective CEO candidate, you know, we are going to be candid and open with the candidates to the extent that, you know, there's information that is important to them making their decisions. And, you know, I think most candidates, as you would expect, you know, are pretty thoroughly versed on all the public material and are interested to know what else there might be to know. And so, you know, to the extent we can share some of that, we've been sharing it, and it's not been a showstopper.
And this, just moving back to the contracts, can you just give me a sense of two things? One, what was the size of the contracts for Russia and Tunisia each? And then I'm just wondering the terms and conditions that would govern those contracts. Were those, and I guess the one in Tunisia, was that a made-in-Tunisia contract and you're dealing with, you know, maybe non-standard terms and conditions, or was it a standard SNC type agreement?
Bert, let me give you a sort of a different answer to the question, and that is that, you know, as a general rule, we have not usually talked about individual project on a project by project basis. We felt that it was important that we disclose which projects we were working on, or that were involved in the issues in Q2, because it's a significant enough number, and it's,
yep.
And it was, you know, people weren't anticipating it. But we really don't want to start delving into the specifics of the contracts themselves.
Okay, fair enough then. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Frédéric Bastien from Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. You commented on the concerns that have been surfacing in the mining sector. Can you provide similar color on your other key target markets, oil and gas, power, and infrastructure? Effectively, I want to like to find out if your clients are facing similar trepidations regarding to their capital projects.
I would observe in terms of the oil and gas business, you know, it depends where you are around the world. You know, things are pretty buoyant in the Middle East, and as some of you may be aware, I'm on the board at Canadian Oil Sands. So, you know, for us out in Alberta with WTI Brent situation being what it is, and you know, the oil sands having moved from a premium to a discount, you know, there's some rethinking. I mean, you saw Suncor make some announcements a week or two ago, and so, you know, there's some issues in Western Canada. So it depends where you are. If you look at some of the other parts of the business, if you look at those, for example, that, you know, might be in some of the P3 stuff or some of the infrastructure activity where governments are making decisions, you know, we've seen a couple of examples where the decision to make the award has been stretched out by 2 or 3 months as governments, you know, work their way through some of their financing issues. So, you know, it depends both on where you are and which segment you're in, but it's just a general kind of feeling that I'm developing, and particularly as I talk to other folks, you know, in the business community, that there are people are being cautious in their outlook.
Is it the same for the power sector?
The power sector is, I think, a little different in the sense that, you know, obviously the power business is driven by economic activity, and you know, as you know, in Canada, you tend to have a higher power consumption as a proportion of economic activity because we're a little more resource-based. So to the extent the resource industry is going, you know, so goes the power business over some cycle. As you move into some of the lesser developed parts, it's a function of where their overall economy is going, and so, you know, in some of those parts of the world, they're also dependent on other kinds of financing, and that gets a little tricky. So, you know, all that to say that the power business, you know, is not quite as predictable as, or at least the leading indicators aren't quite as clear as for example, the commodity businesses might be. But we are active on a number of power projects in a number of parts of the world, and I would think that we will continue to see stronger growth in the power business than we might in a couple of the others.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for that detailed answer. Gilles, I was wondering if you could provide a an operating margin range that we could use as a sort of a run rate, or at least at the very least as a target for your mining business, because it's been it's been 3% or 5% in the first and second quarter. I was wondering if you have a specific target you're aiming for.
No, I think it's more, you know, there is a, as mining this year are having a bit more of a package project versus, so it's get into the, let's say, a change in terms of the percentage, as maybe previously whereby in the past was more services. So there's not a real range I would give for the, let's say, next 6 months. But we are certainly optimistic that, you know, the next 6 months for the mining metallurgy, we think we'll be doing pretty good based on the level of backlog we do have.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from Pierre Lacroix from Desjardins Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I was just curious if you mentioned about the CEO search, and it's going to be completed by probably the end of September. Just wondered if you could provide a bit more color on how it goes, if you have a good selection of candidates, and so on and so forth.
I'm not sure I've got a whole bunch more to add to what I said, you know, that the time frame that we'd set originally still looks like it's quite doable. I've said on a couple of other occasions that, you know, we've had a good cross-section of candidates. I mean, this is, as you would expect, and as I said at the outset of this whole initiative, that this is a global search for a very senior role in not only corporate Canada, but in this sector on a global basis. And so, yes, we've been working our way through the candidates with what I would characterize as a very, very positive approach and a very positive set of candidate names coming forward and credentials. So it's been it's tracking as you would hope a candidate selection process of this sort would do.
So no shortage of talent on that point. Just wanted to know a bit more about the GES Plus, the partnership you have there. You invested somewhat of $40 million there. What is the potential that you see over the years? I mean, I guess it's a 5-year initial agreement, but how do you look at it in the future?
Pretty strong. I mean, back to this whole issue of the oil and gas business in the Middle East and so forth, and we've got some initial work, nothing to sort of really write home about, but the contract is beginning. But you look at the activity level there over the next little while, and it is very positive. So I'm pretty bullish about that one.
Has the bidding process started with Saudi Aramco?
It is a continuing process. I mean, there are, there's a there are many more projects than we're seeing in a number of other areas, and so there is a pretty strong likelihood that a variety of contractors will win a variety of business opportunities.
Okay, sounds good. And one final little question about the CANDU business and its impact on the profitability of the power division. Is there is that business dragging a bit the margins of that division, or it's getting there in terms of profitability improvement?
It's doing what we hoped it would do when we made the acquisition last year.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Jasmin, there are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Well, thank you very much, everybody. If you have any other further questions, please do not hesitate to contact me. Have a nice weekend. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks very much, Joe.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call for today. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect your line.